As many of you know, I play in a group called the Funka Drummers, and it's built around playing the music of the Malenke people, which are people living in West Africa. It's what's called West African polyrhythmic music. Polyrhythmic means you have different rhythms overlaid against each other, and it's quite sophisticated music in its own way. I consider them the Bach of rhythm in this culture. And one of the interesting things I've noticed is that everyone who studies this music reaches a limit of what their body will do and what their body will go in performing it. See, there's a disjunct between what their minds know they want to do and what their bodies in the moment can do. And I call this moment, when there's a disjunct between what I want to do and what I can do, I call it a moment of spaz, when you lose control. You know, when you flay about a little bit, when the body works against itself. It's found in all music, but especially in this tradition. And for very inexperienced players, they find spaz very quickly, almost instantaneously. You run into spaz from the first moment, it seems, when you start to play this kind of music. You lose that kind of self-control. You know what you want to do, but your body just won't do it. More experienced players will go further in the music before they encounter spaz. But even masters of the tradition will encounter spaz somewhere along the line. They will run up to their limit of capacity or ability. No one is immune to spaz. I sometimes called that drumming class I was a part of spaz class, and it was really interesting to watch others come up to their limits of what they can do, where they run up against spaz. Very frustrating, I must tell you, when you can't do what you want to do. I mean, it's not just for music. I mean, sometimes, you know, you might want to climb those stairs, but you're not in the physical condition to be able to do so. Or maybe you want to engage in some kind of physical activity and you know how to do it, but for whatever reason, you can't do it. And it's very frustrating when you find this limitation coming to you. I think everyone has a limit or a breaking point in life. Everyone has a limit of what they can endure. What I would call existential spaz. We reach a limit of capacity to endure where we lose control, it seems, of our lives. I do not completely subscribe to the idea that God only gives us what we can handle. There's some truth in it, but not in the way we typically talk about it or think about it. See, because even the Son of God has his limits. I don't know if you saw the link between those two stories. Two critical moments in Jesus' ministry, Jesus reaches the limits of his endurance and requires the supernatural assistance of angels to endure. Being Son of God, it seems, is in itself not sufficient to meet every moment of life. During his time of trial in the desert, he endured exceptional hunger as he fasted for 40 days, fasting for 40 days to tease apart spiritual hunger from physical hunger. And in that moment, the devil comes to him with temptations. And he's met the limit in his physical endurance. And he needs physical care, and it comes through a supernatural means. An angel or angels are sent to him to minister to him. And that is perhaps his greatest moment of weakness, when he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, confronted with the cup of sacrifice and death. We see Jesus in a moment of existential spaz. He has met his limit. And it says in Luke that an angel of God comes to him and strengthens him. Now, of course, a response could be made that Jesus was dealing with something much bigger than what we would normally deal with us on a daily basis. Yeah. Something beyond a human point of view, even. He was challenging the hostile spiritual forces of the universe. That it would be a mistake simply to conflate his experience with our own. And I agree with that. We're not comparing apples and apples here. Still, I think it's interesting to observe that the Son of God, the embodiment of God, the creator of all things, the Son of God embodied in human form has limits, limits of endurance, limits of his ability to cope. And if he has limits of this type, why would anyone think that they don't have limits of endurance too? And why would we think that people around us don't have their limits of endurance as well? You know, sometimes people get dealt really hard circumstances. They get dealt a hard hand to play in life. And I think at some level, we often think people should be able to endure without limit. At an intellectual level, I think we all recognize that everyone has limits of endurance, but our judgments of others, if we really peer deeply into them, often implicitly expect others to endure at all costs. And when they falter or fail, shame on them. Now, I can imagine someone saying to me, well, of course I know I have limits in my ability to endure, but my question would be, does your life give evidence of this? Because I'm amazed at how far people will try to go before they will admit they have reached their limit of endurance in life. Think about the 12-step program. There are 12 steps to sobriety, but by far the hardest step is the first step to make. Coming to a place where one admits one is powerless before one's addiction, which means in simple terms, coming up against a limit of endurance. I don't have the strength to go any farther in this way. I can't endure anymore. That is the essence of the first step of AA. They say that the first step to solving any problem is admitting that there is one. What problem are you having in life today that you're having a hard time admitting to? What's going on in your life today that's making life hard for you? Because getting to that place of acknowledgement, acknowledging it to yourself, let alone to someone else, is often the hardest step. Some say that you're halfway to solving a problem when you acknowledge it. That shows you just how big the first step is to make. And I've met lots of people who would rather die than come to this place of acknowledgement. To admit that we are powerless before something that is greater than ourselves. That's so hard to do. In the song Angel, Sarah McLachlan sings about something I think we can all relate to. Being overwhelmed by life, finding oneself in a situation, perhaps circumstances even, that takes one to the limits of one's endurance. What are we to do in these moments? These moments that sometimes can extend out for a long time. Well, we often pray for a certain kind of release. Release me from the pain, release me from the anguish, Lord, the torment, the pressure. If only just for a moment, Lord, I just need just a moment of release from what it is I'm enduring. I've reached my limit, Lord. Give me just a moment of repose. Let me be empty. Oh, and weightless, and maybe I'll find some peace tonight in the arms of the angel. I'll fly away from here, from this dark, cold hotel room and the endlessness that you fear. I think the song, we were chatting about this a bit earlier before the service, has a catharsis to it. It's a prayer of release, a kind of surrender even. Lord, send me the angel, fly me away from here, wherever and whatever it is I'm facing, just for a moment of life, can you send me away so that I don't have to endure any longer? Can you give it to me, Lord, please? Makes me think of that old-time hymn, I'll fly away, oh glory, I'll fly away. When I die, hallelujah, by and by, I'll fly away. You know, one of the verses begins, just a few more weary days and then. Life's hard. It's really hard for many of us. And the hymn's a recognition of this. The song Sarah McLachlan wrote also a recognition that life is hard and we can find ourselves in really hard places. And people often need just little moments of refuge in life, a moment of sanctuary, a chance to recompose themselves, a point in time to get a grip on things, maybe a place to take stock, or a place to let go of everything just for a moment and float. I saw this documentary a few months ago with Sally, the historian Bethany Hughes was taking a trip down the Nile River. She took a trip down the Nile River exploring all the ancient Egyptian sites along the river. She took the trip on a passenger barge, just like they've been doing for thousands of years. Julius Caesar took a trip down the Nile River for several months on a barge 2,000 years ago, and the pharaohs did it thousands of years before that. I'm thinking to myself, just floating down the Nile River on a barge for a month, just for a month, without a worry, cut off from the world, not worrying about the war in Ukraine or the price of gas or inflation or other people's problems, just letting go of my own, letting the world go away just for a moment with an all-expense-paid bar on the boat, right? And three lovely meals waiting for me there each day. I got to tell you, I feel so relaxed just thinking about it. It's a moment of flying away, I think, letting go. Where do you get a chance in your life today, though, to lay down the problems and simply float for a time? Just float. I thought retirement would be that opportunity. As I get slowly closer to retirement, I thought maybe retirement might be that place, but I've seen some of the struggles that you who are retired have faced in your life, and I'm thinking maybe retirement isn't automatically a place where you get the chance to float. You know, this worship space of a church, what do we call this worship space? A sanctuary, yeah. I want you to think about that for a second. Think about what the meaning of sanctuary is. You think it's kind of interesting that we call our worship space a sanctuary? A sanctuary, in its core definition, is an action that offers safety and refuge. You know, a sanctuary is a place for safety and refuge. A bird sanctuary is a place designated as safe for birds. A wildlife sanctuary is a place designated as a safe place for wildlife. What does it mean to call a church's worship space a sanctuary? It has to mean it's a safe place designated for people. If bird sanctuaries are for birds, wildlife sanctuaries are for wildlife. A church is meant to be a people sanctuary, a human sanctuary. This is a hallowed place where the people of God come to worship God, the creator of all things, and it's meant to be a safe place for everyone. In fact, a church community is designated as the one place in all the world that's meant to be safe for people. It's meant to be safe for you and me and for everyone. When we say offer friendship and fellowship to all as our primary core value, we are committing ourselves as a community to creating a safe space for people to enter into. You know, historically, churches were places where fugitives and debtors enjoyed immunity from arrest. Out in that crazy world out there, they were vulnerable to arrest, but in the church sanctuary, the ordinary laws and the ordinary ways of culture were suspended. The church was considered sacred ground, the one place in the world where all the pressures of life were temporarily set aside, where people who were at the limits of their capacity to endure could find a form of rest and peace, a place of sanctuary in this crazy world. The church was the one place in all the world where angels were expected to be found. We think of angels as heavenly messengers, supernatural beings who magically, it seems, shows up when they're needed, and of course they are, but that's not the limit of the biblical understanding of angels. In the Bible, human beings can be angels too. The term angel means messenger. Someone who communicates a message on behalf of another. An angel in the Bible is someone who communicates the message and the identity of God to people. The message and identity of God who is love to people. Anyone who embodies holy love to people is an angel in the biblical sense. Someone who is an emissary of holy love, whether from heaven or earth, is an angel of God. And I think an angel is someone who provides sanctuary to another. We often think of sanctuaries as a physical place, and of course they are. But a person can be safe, a safe place for people too. The presence of someone who's embodied with love can be a sanctuary for others too. Have you ever been around someone who you feel safe with? Like really safe. I don't mean just physically safe, although that is important. I mean safe in a complete way, mind, body, and spirit. Someone you trust so deeply, whether you know them well enough, your insight into them recognizes that on so many levels, they are trustworthy and you can completely let your guard down. I wonder if I've ever had that experience before, if I've ever really trusted anyone that way. I kind of imagine it feeling like floating down a river like the Nile. Just so effortlessly, so easily. It's very rare in life to meet someone like this, who's so filled with love, who shines God's love so powerfully that you know you're in a safe place with them, that you're on holy ground with them. It's very rare to find a community of faith, a church that is a true sanctuary as well. I mean, we use the word sanctuary very casually, but think about it. To be a true sanctuary of God is to be a place where God's love shines so powerfully that no matter who you are or where you've come from, you know that you're on sacred ground when you arrive. No matter how beaten up in life you are, you've found yourself a truly safe landing place. Before Marie Smith's memorial service yesterday, I got here around 9, the memorial service was at 10, and I was at the back here, I could hear noises out front. When I got out there, there was a bunch of people on the street hanging out in one of our little areas under at the front door on this side over here. It's a safe place for them, you know? They actually find it a safe place, a place to find refuge from the elements of life. They often will hang out there overnight because it is safe for them. I want the church to be a sanctuary for everyone. What do we do with people like that? Can we just tell them to move on? Are we not betraying ourselves when we do that in some way? I don't have an easy answer to that one. I'm grateful that they feel safe coming here, though. When you think about the McLaughlin song, she's just looking for a moment of respite, like so many of us, a moment of relief from the incredible struggle of life. She's reached her level of endurance. She just wants a moment to experience life without the pressure. Just a moment. God, let me be weightless, and come, angel, fly me away from my circumstances. I think we can all understand that. You know, from the point of view of the Bible, though, that's not enough. That's not God's way. Jesus in Gethsemane makes the same kind of prayer. Lord, come, send your angel to me. Fly me away from what I'm facing. Get me out of this mess. But let your will be done, not mine. And God will often not rescue us out of the troubles of our lives. See, what McLaughlin really needs is the abiding presence of a loving community of angels. That's what she really needs. She doesn't need to be removed from her circumstances. She doesn't need to be rescued and plucked out just for a moment of respite. She needs a loving community of angels who will walk with her in life. And when necessary, carry her burdens for a time. Not forever, of course, because we are each sojourners in this life. We each have our own pilgrimage, our journey to make in life. We cannot assume another person's journey. It is their journey to make. But sometimes we need to carry each other's burdens just long enough to give that person a chance to get their breath. And when she's caught her breath, what she needs is a community of angels who will lovingly and energetically encourage her to meet the challenges of her life head on. Encourage her to take on the challenges of the suffering and pain of our life, turn to face it, and in a responsible and life-giving way, meet it. Meet the challenges of her life. That's what she needs, and a community of angels walking with her. You know, it's amazing what you can meet in life if you have a community of angels walking with you. In fact, there's nothing in this world that you can't face when you have a community of angels who are awakened in love walking with you in life. Did you know that most people who drown in life do so as an act of suicide? I didn't know that. They drown by themselves, too. People drown in life. They can drown in life. And there are lots of people in our community, maybe even some in our church today, that are drowning in life. And they've reached their level of endurance in that isolated, dark, cold hotel room or something like it, a place like it. And they're drowning by themselves. Are we up to the task at Trillium of being that community of angels? Are we prepared to be that place of true sanctuary for others? Are you prepared to go the extra mile with others? Am I prepared to go that extra mile? Not just melting the platitudes of care and concern, not just melting the platitudes of being a sanctuary, but of living out a passionate love with others and creating true sanctuary in our midst. Taking the kinds of risks with people, with one another, and those who come within our circle of care, taking those kinds of risks to make sanctuary real. Because I can tell you one thing that I'm almost certain is true. The world doesn't need churches anymore that aren't also places of true sanctuary. Not in Canada, at least. Those kinds of churches are now gone. Their age is over. Playing church is just not going to cut it today. Being church, which means being true sanctuary to people, being embodied messengers of God's love in action first and also in word, is what the world we live in today in Canada desperately needs. See, everybody meets their moment of existential spaz when we go up against something that goes beyond our ability to endure and we flounder, we flail about. But then the angels step up. They draw beside us, just like they did with Jesus when he met his moments of spaz. They step up for people. You know, in the right moment, God will send heavenly messengers to our world to strengthen those in need. I really believe that's true today as it was long ago. But just like in the ancient times, God will also send his earthly messengers, angels of a different order, to sustain, support, and encourage his children. And it might just be you he sends. Me too. Are we ready?